The association that represents federal law enforcement officers wants its members out from under IRS management. The Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association says the IRS should no longer have a criminal investigation division. FLIOA says the unit has suffered because of the scandal the agency's tax-exempt division a few years back. John Adler is FLIOA's national president. He joins me now with more on the association's current thinking. John, great to have you back. How are you this morning?
Great, Tom. Good to be on your show, as always.
All right, so the IRS issue. Tell us what FLIOA is concerned about and how you would like to change that whole relationship.
Well, unfortunately, Tom, the whole alleged scandal circled or centered around the Lois Lerner email issue continues to resonate in a negative way with IRS in general, and unfortunately has had a very negative trickle-down effect and impact on the Criminal Investigation Division. So what we're dealing with is an unfortunate, well, both appropriations and reputation taint that the special agents in the Criminal Investigation Division now have to endure. Looking at an organization chart, you'll see that the special agents working in CID, which is the acronym for the Criminal Investigation Division, are four layers down. There are a whole bunch of boxes. And any time you look at an organization chart in federal government and you see a plethora of rectangles and a law enforcement component buried beneath it, that inherently is a problem. And when you add to that all the negative news media coverage that has centered around the Lois Lerner alleged scandal with emails, that results in a diluted amount of funds that ultimately reaches in this pecking order, this trickle-down feeding drought, if you will, for the special agents to carry out and do their job. So their staffing numbers decrease significantly, which impacts their ability to carry out their mission. Their own chief, very good man Rich Weber, had written a letter to the U.S. Attorney's offices in January of this year indicating that they would no longer be able to meet the case demands put forth by the U.S. Attorney's offices across the country because of the drastic reduction in funding. That is unacceptable for the public and for the men and women in CID to have to operate under that manner and not receive the requisite funding they need to work terror financing cases, to work transnational money laundering crimes, to work cyber and identity theft crimes, all priority investigative areas in this country. And that's why we're concerned that if they remain under the current positioning under IRS, they will ultimately be dissolved. And that's entirely unacceptable, Tom.
And what are you hearing from some of the rank-and-file members of this Criminal Investigation Division?
It's very disheartening to be associated with this seemingly never-ending scandal, to be ridiculed and mocked, is very difficult. I mean, you need to maintain your reputation. You need to maintain the public trust and confidence in your ability to carry out your mission. And you can't have that when you're ridiculed and mocked as someone. I mean, the public doesn't necessarily understand the nuances or distinguish between where Lois Lerner worked and where the special agents worked and what they do. They have a criminal law enforcement function and mission, which would be better suited with direct line authority to the Treasury Secretary. Their budget would reflect their work, their law enforcement mission, and it wouldn't be clouded or minimized by layers of bureaucracy that have absolutely no background, knowledge, or understanding or direct nexus to a criminal investigation in these high-priority areas.
And is it your expectation that for that change to happen would require congressional action?
Tom, like they say, either an act of God, act of Congress, or act of nature. But yeah, I would say that this would certainly require, similar to what happened with TIGDA, TIGDA being the acronym for the Treasury Inspector General, where they were also formerly and previously referred to as inspection, were formerly under the commissioner in IRS and were subsequently moved out from under IRS and placed or positioned with direct line to the secretary. And they have since excelled and done quite well, avoiding any either reputation issue, but more importantly, diminishing of funding, if you will. You know, special agents with IRS were not intended to be bottom feeders at a tainted IRS meal table. You know, they shouldn't be there eating scraps. They should be there leading the charge so that they can carry out their mission. They would be able to do that more effectively if they were properly positioned, like TIGDA, with direct line to the secretary.
And so they also investigate tax cases in addition to the other ones you mentioned. Is that correct?
Yeah, IRS are the sole law enforcement professionals who have the authority to investigate Title 26, and Title 26 includes tax evasion, false subscription, and other crimes. But they're also the world's premier financial investigators, Tom, when it comes to money laundering, in particular, Title 31 charges as well, financial or what was formerly called custom charges. I mean, they're involved in virtually every financial investigation in addition to owning Title 26, which are, as you just referred to, the traditional tax evasion type cases.
And I imagine that it's more difficult to do this type of investigating when perhaps opposing lawyers or the parties involved feel that the investigation was politically motivated. And this is what people are saying about that tax-exempt division, that their denials with lengthening out of the process of approval for tax-exempt status was politically motivated. We still haven't really gotten to the bottom of it yet, but if that's the case, even that thought, it seems like that could also hinder investigative work.
Absolutely, Tom. I mean, when your reputation is diminished in both the eyes of Congress and the general public, it impacts how you perform your job. So Congress's reaction naturally will be to significantly cut the budget for IRS. So again, with CID being lower in the organization chart, they become bottom feeders. And alternatively, in terms of reputation, you're right. So what happens is now every investigation will be challenged as a biased investigation. And I can tell you that the folks over there in CID are the most nonpartisan professional investigators in the world. And unfortunately, anything they do will now be sort of countered with an allegation similar to what was hit upon in the Lois Lerner email scandal, Tom, as you mentioned, which is some sort of inherent or political motivation, and that just really pulls out the rug from the otherwise fawnable legs of those enforcing Title 26 and these other high-profile financial crimes.
All right, so FLIOA, John, has been looking at a lot of issues lately, and I want to ask you about some of those, in particular, Homeland Security immigration detainer issues. What's going on there? What does it look like from the law enforcement standpoint?
We're really concerned with that. There's a lot of dangerous theater going on there and sort of a Hatfield-McCoy apparent feud that is taking place between members of ICE and those on the local law enforcement level and the sheriffs in particular. So what we've seen in the high-profile coverage of this poor woman, Ms. Steinle, who was killed by, unfortunately, a very violent deportable alien and shouldn't have happened. The fallout is the sort of quick draw of finger pointing and blame, and personally, we're concerned with the public's confidence in our collective law enforcement mission to keep the public safe. So, what's at stake here is the need for all the law enforcement parties to get together, sit down, figure out what can be done more immediately, so that everyone could work together to keep the American public safe while we try to address this immigration nightmare, which unfortunately our Congress seems unable or incapable of addressing and moving forward with any meaningful reform. But we have to address the concerns that are raised by the state and local partners who are critical to the overall enforcement of immigration detainers, and those who are violent out there who should be deported and should not be allowed to reenter this country.
This is another one of those issues where there are so much political debate surrounding it. It's hard to get down to what the reality is. On one hand, you have people, you know, from Donald Trump saying, well, we have a country or we don't with respect to borders. On the other hand, there are people saying this is the administration that has caused more deportations than anybody prior to them. And so, yes, of course, we've got great borders. What does it look like at the law enforcement issue? Is there pressure to get rid of people that should not be in the country, or pressure to say, well, let's look the other way till we sort this all out?
Yeah, see that's a good question. There is a mixture. There is an uncertainty, Tom, and uncertainty leads to only bad things in the law enforcement profession. The mixed signals and the political debates do impact the morale and the guidance and direction for the law enforcement boots in the ground. So ICE does have certain priority programs. They want to target the most violent, the most potentially dangerous, those with gang, terrorist, or violent crime affiliation. But that's the sort of concept, but it has to translate into meaningful partnerships and meaningful enforcement. I mean, you mentioned with some of the candidates barking about the need for a wall or a fence. Well, border enforcement is done in conjunction with meaningful immigration reform. But on the local level, those who actually enforce it, you're right, Tom, they need clearer guidance. They need better commitment from the elected officials, from our national leaders, so that they know when they're out there, they can do their job and not have to worry or not have sort of this whole high-priority issue turn into a sports fishing event where it's simply catch and release, or one law enforcement component is pointing at the other saying you're responsible for the release of a violent deportable alien. That has to stop. You know, we all need to work together, and we all need to know what our priority mission is, and we'll be supported while we carry it out.
Because I imagine this type of uncertainty creates a greater degree of physical danger at the very basic level for the officers on the line there.
Tom, that does in general in law enforcement. We see this on all levels now, a certain reluctance or hesitance to carry out the enforcement piece. And what happens is when a law enforcement officer begins to take pause in trusting their experience, their basic sense, their training, their partners, then we are at greater risk of getting hurt. And one of the ways to resolve that is get all the big boys and girls at the table, sit down, realize we've got one common mission, which is to keep the citizens in our country safe, and let's figure out how to do it better.
We're speaking with John Adler. He's president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, FLEOA. And there are some pieces of legislation, too, that are affecting members of FLEOA, and I wanted to ask you about those. One is concentrating on the inspectors general, who are actually armed, sworn officers, and a bill concerning disarming them. What is the bill doing, and what's your position on it?
Yeah, we're concerned. We have legislation that we initiated, H.R. 2137, which is the Federal Law Enforcement Self-Defense and Protection Act, and introduced by Congressman Collins. We're concerned, Tom, that the last government shutdown, some of the special agents in the Inspector General community were disarmed. They were told to lock up their weapons because of certain liability concerns by virtue of their furlough status. What we're concerned with, and we want to prevent this, and obviously the possibility of a looming shutdown is now in front of us, both by way of the debt ceiling and the budget itself. So what we've seen from the statistics is that there's an alarming number of attacks or bias attacks being committed against law enforcement. You know, last year we saw the high profile, tragic deaths of NYPD officers Wenjin Liu and Rafael Ramos, two heroes that were killed in line of duty simply for being cops, and Brian Dixon, State Police, Pennsylvania, another honorable man who was killed simply because he wore the uniform for law enforcement. We see from the National Law Enforcement Memorial the number one cause of felonious fatalities committed against law enforcement are ambushes. We see from the ISIS contingent that they are encouraging their followers, all the psychotic folk out there in the Neverland, to target and attack law enforcement and military personnel. So we're concerned that in a furlough situation, and it's more so it would impact the Inspector General community, we don't want anybody disarmed. You know, bad guys and terrorists obviously don't play by a rule book. They simply light it on fire to keep warm. And we want to make sure that all the men and women out there who work the job every day have a means to defend themselves. Should another shutdown happen, should a furlough occur, we want our folks to be able to defend themselves 24/7 against anyone who targets them for being a law enforcement officer.
And this kind of brings up the larger issue with law enforcement in the United States. We seem to have developed an almost schizophrenic relationship with the thin blue line because of a lot of events outside of the federal government. But nevertheless, I'm wondering, has the attitude that seems to have developed in some quarters against law enforcement, are you seeing that effect against federal law enforcement, which is not the daily people see on the beat, you know, maybe outside of Washington, D.C.?
We absolutely feel the impact, Tom. The general public doesn't necessarily distinguish or get bogged down in the semantics of fed, state, and local. They see a shield. They see somebody in uniform, or they see somebody in a vehicle with certain radio features that identifies them as a law enforcement officer, and they become targeted or a potential target for a biased crime. You know, we sort of made the argument that law enforcement officers should be included in the protected group for hate crime charges, given the number of law enforcement officers who are attacked each year. I think on average, and this includes federal, state, and local, anywhere from 55,000 plus to 56,000 are assaulted and injured each year, 15,000 of which are seriously injured, and mostly by the quote-unquote unarmed saint. 80+% of those injuries caused by those folks. So have we felt it? Absolutely. You know, federal law enforcement officers have men and women in uniform as well as plain clothes. And when you're out there interacting with the public, all they see is law enforcement official. And in light of everything going on, a sort of prevailing anti-law enforcement attitude, that certainly places our men and women in greater harm's way.
Big Agenda. John Adler is the national president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Okay, my pleasure, Tom.